Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. As always, I am your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, we meet Sarah Cummings, a professional trail runner for Brooks based in Park City, Utah. We talk about her introduction to the trail world after a significant collegiate and post-collegiate career on the roads, her experience and the lessons learned rehabbing from a traumatic hamstring injury that could have ended her running career altogether. We also talk about how she landed in Park City, her thoughts on the Wasatch trail running scene, her 2022 racing plans, and more. As you all know, I think the Wasatch has the potential to be the next American cultural hub for trail running. In fact, one of my big predictions is that by 2023, this will be the place, in the same way that Mill Valley carried the banner in the mid-2010s and how Flagstaff did the same in the late 2010s. I think that there's been a gap to fill for a few years, especially since the pandemic started, and I think it's anyone's for the taking. So why not Salt Lake? Anyways, I say that here because I think Sarah is becoming one of the great ambassadors for our region, and her influence, along with others, will help make it happen fast. Okay, with that, let's get started. Sarah Cummings, welcome to the Single Track Podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
And it's great to finally meet you. You're based over across the Wasatch in Park City. I'm here in Salt Lake City, and you only recently came on my radar. So it's not often that we meet on a podcast, but here we are.
Yeah, I'm excited about meeting for a run soon too, hopefully.
Absolutely. So I think some congratulations are in order. You just got fifth place in the Ultra Runner of the Year Awards, which is incredible. And you also just won the JFK 50. I think you do have some name recognition in the community, but for any folks that don't know your story, can you give us just a little bit of background on how you got into the sport? Because you've made an immediate splash.
Yeah, thank you. That was quite a surprise to receive that honor, and definitely owe a lot of it to the awesome Salt Lake community that's taught me everything I know about trail running and convinced me to give it a try. So just, you know, rewinding a little bit, I started running my sophomore year of high school. Prior to that, I was a figure skater. So I had got my start with winter sports, and now I'm doing them again a bit more in different ways, but running wasn't my thing. Like, ice skating was definitely what I did. It was part of my identity. I started at age 5, was before school, after school, the whole nine yards. And running was something that I would do in PE class for the presidential physical fitness test. And I'm very competitive. So when that time came around, it was game on. And I would often, or I guess always, win and usually beat most of the boys too. And so I knew that I was decent, but I didn't know anyone that ran, didn't have any local neighborhood peers or even adults in my life that competed on the roads or the track. So it wasn't really something that I grasped as a potential activity apart from just the test in school. Fast forward to my sophomore year of high school, my sister's elementary school had a fundraiser 5K. At the time, we were living in California. Up until 13, I was in New Jersey, but we moved west right before high school. And my dad challenged me the morning of the race. I wasn't planning to run, but he didn't think I could beat him. And so that was all I needed. And I ended up running 19 something for a 5K, which I soon learned was quite good coming from not the couch, but not from doing any running. And a couple of weeks later, I was running the California State Cross Country Meet for Corona Del Mar High School. So things escalated quickly. And I continued to ice skate for another year, but started to phase that out when I was getting recruited to run in college. And also, just like that aside, I loved everything about running for my high school team. And yeah, it was quite a drastic change from ice skating, where everything is so subjective. And I think that was one thing that I really loved, just how black and white running was. And so I ran in college, 5K, 10K specialist on the track, and then cross country, of course, and then indoor track, I did more of the 3K, 5K. And upon graduating, moved to New York City to start working, and pretty much immediately transitioned to road racing for the New York Athletic Club. I'd had a number of college teammates that had run for the club before, and it was a pretty seamless path to follow. And I know we were taking a long way to get to trail running. I would pretty much refuse to run on anything but pavement, which is so funny now. Like in retrospect, like even in college, I would make up every excuse in the book, like claiming allergies, which I do have, but probably using that excuse more than necessary to not run on the towpath in Princeton. So I was all about the roads, and I would run loops in Central Park every morning or on the West Side Highway when I lived in New York. And it wasn't until I came to Park City in August of 2020, where I first started to dabble on the trails. I got into trail running by moving to Utah, and I don't think if it hadn't been for COVID that I ever would have, which is just crazy now to think back over the last year and a half, because if it hadn't been for COVID, I wouldn't have come to Utah for 2 weeks, and that was the start of it all. So, yeah.
There's a lot that I want to dive into there. For listening to the show, you know that I'm on a mission to raise the profile of the Salt Lake City, Park City trail scene. And it's awesome that it converted you from the roads to the trails. And for listeners that might not be familiar with Park City in particular, can you talk about what attracted you to that area and why it makes for a great place to live and train?
Yeah. So my dad is a big skier, and I had come out here to Park City like a week a year all through childhood and tapered off a bit in college and then afterwards. But I was very familiar with Park City in the winter, but I would only ever run on the treadmill when I came out in the winter. So I hadn't visited in the summer, mostly because in the summer, when I think prior to COVID, when we could travel anywhere, there's always this like grass is greener, let's go to Europe, let's just go further rather than just exploring your backyard. So in the summer, I never really thought to stay in the country and explore what the West had to offer. Also, I was super intimidated by the altitude coming here for a week at a time from New York, combining like the dry, cold air with the 7,000 feet, just you hate every step and then, you know, leaving after a week. So I think that I loved visiting in the winter. I very much thought of it as, okay, we go to the mountain and then that's all. And then I just had memories of trying to do track workouts on the treadmill in the winter. And so getting ready for indoor track in college and stuff like that. So I never had great running memories associated with Utah. And a lot of the time, actually, when we came here through my childhood, I was still figure skating. So we'd actually drive down to the U, get off at Foothill Drive, which is so funny because now I think of that as that's like the running area, but that used to be where we would go skate. What happened was I was in the middle of the first COVID summer living in New York City, and my sister and I, she also is a runner, we just decided to come out here for 2 weeks to stay at our parents' house. And it was really just like, okay, like, no real plan. Everyone was working remotely and New York was super hot and humid in August, like it always is. Anyone from the East Coast knows that. So we came out for 2 weeks and I just didn't leave, which is so crazy because, like I said, I very much lived in Manhattan and did the work in Midtown thing and had a lot of great friends there and family, and COVID just blew everything apart. And for me, at least, I started thinking like, why am I here? Do I really need to be here? And you know, where else could I be? And I kind of just, you know, fell in love with Park City and the mountains, this whole area, started meeting the awesome people in the running / adventuring community, both in Park City and then down in Salt Lake. And then I think before it was like official, I think I knew that I wasn't going to be able to leave. So to go back to answer your question, why I think it's a great place to live and train. The weather can't be beat and the sunshine is just incredible. Yeah. And I love snow sports too. So I put that on the back burner for a while, but grew up snowboarding and now I've gotten into splitboarding and I'm trying Nordic skiing, trying to like that, but it's still a love-hate thing there. And then of course, ice skating. And then on top of that, the running is just incredible. At first I was sticking to the roads, but then was shown the light on the trails and yeah, there's no turning back. So
you've obviously had this running career on the roads in college, in high school, and now on trails. And I'm curious, are you an athlete at this point in your career where you're still running year round and you're training for events year round? Or are you getting to a point where you have very clearly defined off seasons and training seasons? And yeah, like for example, I was just listening to a podcast this morning between Jim Walmsley and Dylan Bowman. And Jim talks about how he's become this like ski mountaineer and in a Nordic skier. And like, he's only running like 8 to 9 months of the year, as opposed to just crushing miles year round. Yeah. So I'm curious to get your scenario there.
Funny, because I was also listening to that podcast in the second half of my run this morning. So I heard that too, but I definitely do a lot more uphill splitboarding, uphill laps, mostly just at Park City Mountain. Recently did my Avi 1 training, but have yet to really get out there outside of the resort. But yeah, I think I'm still working that in. A lot of it is just trusting that that will be sufficient or better fitness, which is something that I've always struggled with, just believing the training is enough. And I definitely notice huge fitness gains from doing that and from being at altitude. But I don't think I'm quite there yet in terms of having defined off seasons. I had a pretty long recovery from JFK in terms of just motivation. And then I got sick. And so during that time, it wasn't running a ton. And then it snowed a lot and I was doing much more skinning. And I felt pretty great coming off that. So that was a good little, like, you know, low stakes experiment. And so I think I'll try to incorporate it more, but I'm still running year round. Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about diving into is what happened in your career prior to getting into trail running. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago and you talked about this hamstring injury that you suffered towards the end of your like formal road running career. And I'm curious what caused that injury and what the nature of the injury was and how you dealt with the recovery, at least initially.
Yeah, that was a hamstring avulsion or rupture. People use different terms, but basically what happened was that all the tendons of my hamstring tore off my pelvis. And that's a pretty dire situation that requires surgery as soon as possible to reattach the hamstrings. In my case, I have these six like anchors. They're not metal screws, but they're kind of screw-like in function. And yeah, but just the surgery is pretty urgent just to make sure that you don't lose, or you're going to lose some functioning the hamstring, but just to preserve as much as you can. So yeah, so that actually came into my running career with a not great left hamstring from an ice skating injury. And it just, you know, turned into tendonitis, tendinosis. I always forget what that exact difference is, but that progressed rapidly from age 15 until the accident or the final straw at the end of 2016. So it was something that definitely could have been prevented. And I ran injured or at not full capacity for many years, which is something that I swear that I won't do. And then I end up somehow doing it again. But it was a lack of trust of my body in terms of if I do take this time off and do the strength work that's required and the PT, that it will get better. I think it was just with anyone that's experienced a hamstring injury, it feels like there's no method to the madness. And whatever you do, you can't predict what day it will feel good and what day it won't. And I've heard, you know, this discussed in other podcasts. And I think it was almost like a relief when the final tear actually occurred and I was bedridden for 6 weeks because I was not taking care of myself. Someone needed I needed something external to stop me. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to do it myself. And so I learned a ton through that all and definitely came back to running a different person and just now appreciate everything so much more. I'd say, I think I chose to isolate myself a lot during my road running years in terms of sticking to a training schedule. If I had this on the plan and I, you know, reached out to see if anyone was interested in doing it and workouts didn't line up perfectly, I would just forge off on my own or choose races on my own. And I think the surgery helped me to realize how important community is and the process and that when I was rehabbing for all of those months, 18 or so before I could train again, that what I missed most was the community. And I thought it would be the competitions. So yeah, it's been a long road, but I do think, and something that we've talked about was that coming or transitioning to the trails more has been amazing for my hamstring and just overall strength building. I look back now and realize how, if you just focus on road running, you're not that great of an athlete. You're actually like really weak, which is so sad. And I think I quickly realized that when I started trying to keep up with people climbing all the vert there is here, that I just had no quad strength. And so I think just like the agility that running on the trails requires and all the different muscle groups has been great to just help my body feel better than it has in a really long time.
You really strike me as an internally motivated person, really driven, hardworking. And I say that because I just had Hillary Allen on the podcast and she also suffered a pretty traumatic injury. One that doctors said that she probably wouldn't recover from. Walking was a victory. And I'm curious about your mindset during the recovery process. You hinted at it a bit, but when you were diagnosed and when you had surgery, and then as the recovery started to take place, did you have belief in the process that you were going to return to running at the capacity that you are now? Because clearly you're near the top of the trail running scene already. So I'm just curious about that.
It was a wild roller coaster. I think like going into the surgery, I had to convince myself that I'd come out better than ever just to mentally fortify myself. But that was never told to me by the surgeons. They were just like, hey, this isn't a performance enhancing surgery. It's just purely to fix you like functionally, like you can walk and be a normal person. And it's not a common surgery that runners have. So I told myself that. And I remember I was all motivated. I was going to run Chicago the next year and I was going to be better than ever. And then in the early stages post-surgery and probably up until a year after, I was in terrible pain all the time. And I felt like my recovery wasn't coming along as fast as I thought it should. And I remember just being like, I don't care. I'm never going to race again because I'm never going to be able to run PRs. And that's going back to what I mentioned before, I had an ego in that regard because I was like, you know, if I'm like, that's embarrassing. If I go back and run and people can be like, oh, it's a comeback, this and that. And so went through all that. And then I remember just missing friends so much. So even like when I was still in a lot of pain, I would get out there and run socially and I would only run with like other people, like days when people couldn't meet. I'd be like, no, I'm not. Cause it's only worth it if I can see my friends. A turning point was almost when I started being more present. I stopped thinking like, okay, when am I going to be ready to train again? When am I going to be ready to like, what's the next race on my calendar? And it kind of like, it's just be, present. And that I felt like was the most helpful in just taking the recovery as it came and appreciating each pain-free run. And for me, at least, that helped me end up in a place where I could train again. So the answer is yes, then no, then I'll just be happy to be back out there again. And I still haven't matched my marathon PR or half from before. And it is what it is. So I'm grateful to be able to run pain-free and continue to meet people and see places through running. So it's just so incredible.
You said something that caught my ear earlier, and that was in the moments that led up to the injury, you needed something external to stop you, which again, I'm somebody that's fascinated by mindset. And I said earlier that you strike me as somebody with this incredible work ethic. Is that something you still struggle with today, where you have this ability to work harder than most and it can just go to this extreme?
I think it, yes, it still can. I think I've learned lessons through that. And since then, something that's been really helpful for me with trail running is that so much of it is effort-based. And I think I put off like being in tune with my body and learning to go by feel and really trusting my body by having a track and road career for so long, because you can just make it be all about the numbers. Like, you don't have to take ownership over really what the workout or the race is. It just make it down to an exact science in some ways. And so you're almost outsourcing everything, rather than when you're in a long trail race, like you really need to be in touch. And I've now almost always have effort-based workouts, or just rather than prescribed pace, it'll be like marathon-based effort or lactate threshold. And that, like, having to know what that is, and it differs, right? Whether what the air quality is like, where, what elevation you're at, how cold it is, all these things, like, has been really helpful. And I wish I had been forced to do it sooner, because I think that all feeds back to just listening to your body, knowing when to stop, all those kinds of things that I just didn't have to take responsibility for.
I got to ask one more thing. You said something also fascinating, and that is that you're working towards this mindset of believing that the training is enough. And I mentioned that because I think a lot of ultra runners, myself included, we all deal with this insecurity of, even though we're putting in work week after week, and there's always a long run, there's always a workout, there's always a ton of time on feet, there's still a ton of doubt. I'm curious if you've come up with any modes of thinking to trust the work you've done from a mental standpoint.
Yeah, that's like such a constant battle. And I think working with a coach has been really helpful for me in that regard, because there's someone else that knows what you're doing and you're trusting them, they're trusting you. That's big. I think I would still really struggle to write my own training and then step the line and be like, this was enough. So yeah, that's a constant work in progress for sure. If you find any secrets on that front, let me know.
The next thing I want to talk about is actually JFK 50. And the reason I want to talk about it is, A, it's one of the more notable races here in the US, but also you trained for it in Park City. And when I think about training in Utah, I think of getting ready for races like UTMB and Western States and more of the traditional Verde Mountain Ultra Trail Marathon. So what kind of training were you doing in Park City to win that race?
Yeah, so I totally see that side of it. But actually, it's cool that Park City offers a lot of race simulation opportunities. For example, you have the rail trail, which is slightly downhill, and the CNO is not. It's pretty pancake flat, but it's very similar surface. And then something like Round Valley, that is more of an undulating trail opportunity rather than straight up, straight down, which is like more what you experience here, like you said. And then other kind of little fun training opportunities, like the road up to the Olympic Park, where you have the bobsled and the ski jump.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so a lot of those things simulate different parts of the course at JFK. So the beginning of the course has a road climb that's pretty similar to Olympic Park, going up to the visitor center. And then in terms of just the different parts of the JFK course, something that I did for my longest run, which was 30 miles, the cycle, was I parked in Round Valley, which is, for anyone that's local to Salt Lake, knows just a great open access area with not super verdy trails, but really well-maintained loops. I parked there, did a loop with a great crew, changed my shoes, just like I would from trail shoes. So I did a 10-mile loop that was simulating the 16 miles of the Appalachian Trail and JFK, changed shoes, had a snack. And then I set off on the rail trail for 20 miles to Colville, ended at the 7-Eleven Colville, and then had a semi hitchhike back. So it was like simulating the towpath section of the JFK and then an early trail section. So actually I found there were a number of ways to get that type of specificity that I think is so important for trail races. I definitely did less, although I love to see peaks and do big mountain runs, I didn't do quite as much of that in October and November. I was also back east for the fall edition of the Boston Marathon and to watch my dad. And I was able to get on some East Coast trails similar, you know, to the rootiness of the Appalachian Trail during that weekend too. So yeah, it worked.
I think you painted a perfect picture of what's possible for JFK at Park City. And I'm realizing that I completely overlooked the fact that like Bowerman trains there, for example, yeah. And it's like a world-class location for marathon training and stuff. So no, that actually makes a ton of sense. What else do you have on the calendar for 2022? What's up next? And yeah, if you could talk just about the rest of the calendar year, that'd be awesome.
So I have three big races right now, and I'll probably fill in, but maybe not. I did race a lot last year, and I'm trying to be a bit more intentional and focus on big races. So at the end of February, I'm going to run the US 50K Road Championships. It's back in New York. So I've been just taking the path of least resistance in terms of the road versus the trail for this winter, early part of winter. I potentially would have done a Black Canyon, but my recovery from JFK was pretty prolonged. COVID will do that to you. So yeah, that sent me back a little bit, but I'm excited about the road 50K. I've run a few and I've been on a few teams, but I haven't done the US championships ever. And then in early April, I'm planning to give Lake Sonoma another go. I had a really rough time there in September, and I have unfinished business, and I'm excited to try to learn from my major mistakes there. And then in August, I'm going to be going to Comrades. So those are like the few big things. And then, like I said, I'm sure I'll do something in like the early summer, later spring. But yeah, for now, those are like the main race of the year.
Yeah, I dig the commitment to road ultra marathoning. Are you going to be doing with Comrades, for example? Are you going out early to train on the course, or is that just going to be like a get there right before the race and leave right after as well?
No, I don't know the exact details of that. I would love to stay for longer. And just a big trip, and I've never been down there. So yeah, to be determined, but hopefully yes.
And then maybe we can also talk about your recent sponsorship with Brooks.
Yes, super excited and honored to be with Brooks for the next couple of years. It's funny because like I mentioned before, I haven't run faster than my pre-surgery PRs, and both of those were run in the Brooks T7 racers, those like neon yellow ones that a lot of people used to run in. So I've worn Brooks over the years. There was a little bit of time, probably the last couple of years of my road focus, where I did start to wear 4% Nike gear just because that was whatever it was doing. But right out of college, I started wearing Brooks because I was running with the New York Athletic Club, and we were a Brooks team. And so have a long history with the shoe, and obviously my PRs are in them. So I am a big fan of the brand. And what happened or how I was connected was via Julie Cully, who is leading marketing over there after transitioning from being the head coach at Georgetown. She had run for the New York Athletic Club and then also New Jersey, New York Track Club, where a bunch of my college teammates had gone. So I knew her and we reconnected, and she told me what Brooks was thinking and doing and their goals in the trail space. And then the kicker being that they were going to sponsor JFK again. And this was my second time running JFK in 2020. I got lost, which anyone that knows me knows that that's not uncommon for me on any like trail run. And so I've had a few race incidences, but anyway, that, you know, meant that I, you know, had like, it was in the back of my mind the whole year after to, you know, do I want to go back? And if you do go back and you got second the year before, like, well, you want to win, but that's not under control. So yeah, anyway, it was a lot of like mental back and forth in terms of if I wanted to go back to JFK. But then when I initially spoke to Julie and learned that Brooks would be taking the sponsorship for the event for the next number of years, it just all felt right and came together with them. And to be a part of something new was really exciting. And also the fact that, you know, I had love the shoes and had so much success with the road shoes. And I think Hillary mentioned this on your podcast a few weeks ago or last week, that it's fundamentally a good shoe and you add the trail bells and whistles, like that's a lesser of a thing. Like if you're starting with a great shoe, that's what's critical. And I felt like that with them. And so, yeah, I started testing all of their trail shoes. Well, they have three main ones and I love the Catamount, which is the lighter weight trail racer. And the Caldera is amazingly cushioned, but not so much so that you are tripping over yourself. Great for long days. And yeah, it all felt like it was meant to be. So I'm really excited that they're diving into the space.
It seems like an incredibly exciting time to be joining that team. As you said, they're making a really strong move into the space. We've had a couple Brooks people on the podcast recently, Hillary included. You hinted at it earlier. I'm curious, do you have any insight into the investments they're making in the trail space, including the JFK sponsorship? Like, do you have any insight into what their goals are long-term?
You know, not a ton, unfortunately. I hope to learn more, but I think a lot of it is awareness. It's funny that so how few people know that they actually have a whole trail line. And I just feel like I've been this little voice trying to be like, what about Brooks? Hopefully we can all, as part of the team, spread awareness about what they're doing. Cause so many people are diehard Brooks fans when it comes to road shoes, but then branch out or look to another, maybe more visible brand when it comes to jumping on the trail. So yeah, they have a great product and I'm excited to come along with whatever it is they have in store. So
this is another question we always ask pro athletes. Would you ever consider doing this full time? Like if you were put in a position with Brooks where they just said, we'll make sure that all of your expenses are covered, all of your cost of living is covered, would you do it?
So I've toyed with this thought many times over the years. And well, I'm not capable of napping. So I think that immediately removes me from running full time. So I think like being able to take naps is a requirement of a full time runner. But no, I mean, just kidding about that. But I don't think I could. I think I could try, but I feel like after a week, I'd end up like cooking up some project. I'm very entrepreneurial and I'm always just getting into things. And I don't think I would feel, you know, fulfilled. I think running in the capacity I'm doing now and working as well, that they positively fuel each other. And I'm definitely at a place with my, you know, career where I don't feel like it's impeding my training. In my, you know, first 5 to plus 8 years, maybe out of college, definitely was, but I'm not sure, like if I, you know, had more time, what I would do with it. Probably nothing productive.
What do you do for work?
So I work remotely now at a crypto derivatives exchange. I grew up in traditional finance and made the switch to crypto last summer. So it's been a fun ride and I'm learning a ton. And I love that I can work at FTX, which is the name of the exchange, and also live in Utah and explore all that it has to offer.
I follow other sports leagues like the NFL and the NBA, and I'm starting to see athletes there take their salaries in crypto, and I'm waiting for the day when the first trail running athlete does the same, takes like a portion of their salary in Bitcoin.
I don't think
or something.
It's going to be me, but I'm already linked to it, so I'm good, but that will be fascinating. I know there are a few, I think Dylan Bowman is a crypto guy.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I've heard his podcast. I think he did one that was focused on Bitcoin, but yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
And so when you say that you have more work-life balance to afford training and not feeling like you're interrupted, is that due to the pandemic and things going remote more, or is it also the nature of the job?
I think it's more remote. And when I was living and working in Manhattan, there's a lot of like post-work stuff, which is great and it's fun and socializing with colleagues, but it's really easy to lose track of time. And I think sleep really is the first to suffer or to go. And then your running suffers as a result. And I think working remotely, I've been able to eat better and sleep more. And I've noticed huge gains from that. And maybe my answer would change in a year once those have become more like status quo, but I definitely still feel like sleep at least has been a huge boost and something that wasn't a given before.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think pre-pandemic to now, I think I gained 10 hours a week back in my life just from commuting.
Yeah.
And probably another 10 hours walking back and forth between meetings and stuff like that. So it's amazing what we gained back. As somebody that has spent a lot of time in the track scene and on the road scene, and now you're here on the trails, what is exciting you most about this sport?
I am most excited about the Utah and specifically Salt Lake / you know, a little up the hill Park City community. I said this at the beginning, but I wouldn't be trail running or racing if it wasn't for all of the people that I've met in the last year and a half that have showed me the way. And I'm so grateful for that. Like I said before, I'm not a good navigator, so it's not like I add much in that way. And I was definitely like hanging on for dear life for many of these runs and still do, because there are just so many incredible athletes and people in the Salt Lake community. So I'm most excited about Utah. And I don't think we're totally on the map yet. I think it's getting there. Like, you definitely hear in some race reports reference the Utah crew, but yeah, I can't wait to see this community continue to grow and excel. And when I've, you know, been racing outside of the state, I've just been hoping to make the Salt Lake crew proud and definitely think about that when I'm out in California or back east, because I think it's so cool what we have here. So
I can't help myself. I think we need to nerd out on the Salt Lake City scene for a bit. I think one of the cool things about Salt Lake is, and Park City, you can essentially trail run year round. There's always going to be trails where you can run. You're not impeded by crazy snow drifts and stuff like that. And I don't know what it's been like over in Park City this winter, but we haven't had any snow here on the Salt Lake side, and everything below 8,000 feet has been totally runnable. So if you're somebody that's not into skiing, you don't have to go to Arizona or Southern California to do your thing year round.
Yeah. I mean, Round Valley, we talked about before, is pristine right now. Like, the amount of people that get out and get after it and just packed on the trails is so cool. I think, like, something that I reflect back on now, having come here a week at a time in the winter, I just wish I knew what was under the snow, because it's hard to know what's a trail and what's, like, you're not necessarily going to pick up on it if you're only seeing these areas when they're snow covered or like snowy-ish, like in this time of year, especially up in Park City. So yeah. I think, like I said, I'm really excited about the Salt Lake community, but I still feel like there's definitely an access problem when it comes to trail running, and just not like, it's not like on the roads where you can just hit the road and do a little loop and find your way. And like, another thing, like reflecting back on why I dislike trails was, it's, I like to be in control, and I'm working on that. And I'm definitely, you know, like, lessen that it, desire isn't there to the extent that it used to be, but you're totally out of control, I think, when it comes to trail running. Right. And a lot of people are drawn to running because it does give them a sense of control in their life where they might not have it. And something that I've had to go through and experience and be okay with is that lack of control. My life in New York was so like held together by a thread. I just laugh now and think, like, if I saw a moose like on my run in the morning in New York and I had to go the different way, that might have like just like, it would just been like meltdown. And now it's just like, I, you know, you go up a trail, like up here in Park City, there are a ton of trails where the moose just lay across and it's like, well, not going that way today. So need to make a new plan. And so I think like the access, and then just the, sometimes what people are looking for when they start running, it's not necessarily what trail running offers. So those are the things that I think we could work on too.
I was reminded of this again. You said something else really good earlier in the conversation. You said that you left figure skating because you didn't like the subjectivity of it. And I think trail running is somewhat subjective too, in that paces go out the door because you're on all sorts of different terrain and stuff like that. And so I'm curious if you've had a shift given that there is a lot of subjectivity in trail running as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, just going back to that subjectivity versus objectivity in running, it was like me grasping for control, right? And that was what I did like about running relative to ice skating, where you're being judged and nothing's in your control. So definitely that was what I got with my, you know, early years and through many of the years. And I swore like I would never do a technical sport again after skating, which meant like the steeplechase was totally out. But I do think along the lines of what you just said, this trail running is very subjective and it's technical, and the practice on specific terrain is so crucial, and paces go out the door. And I wasn't someone that was necessarily like always fixated on pace, but it was what I used as like an external, you know, validator in terms of just like, you know, is this the right effort? Like what I talked about before, where it's not really trusting your body. Right. And so that's where I think it comes in a lot too, in the subjective sense there. So yeah, I agree. It's incredibly subjective. And I think the other cardinal rule of road running would be like, never stop. Like, that's just like, if you do, it's all over, or hike or walk, you know what I mean? And so being able to trust that you're hiking at the right spot in a race, and that hiking's okay in a training run, I think that just opened doors for me too, because obviously you're not going to be able to keep running up some of these inclines that we have here. But if you approach it with like that mentality, then you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. So,
well, yeah. I really appreciate the insight into your mind there and the perspective, because I'm also a control person. I feel those same things. I had never put it in the same words, but that's exactly how I feel. And it also reminds me, one of the first videos I ever watched coming into the sport was Billy Yang's UTMB video. And there's this like famous scene in the movie where Tim Tollefson is coming out of an aid station. I think he's climbing out of like Lake Contamine or something. And he's like, I have to remind myself that it's okay to hike. And he comes from that classic hardcore road running background too. Right. And yeah, I just think it's a universal theme amongst all ultra runners. So I appreciate those thoughts. You also hinted at this too, but I'm curious, given that you spent so much time on the roads and you're relatively new to trails, do you notice anything missing in our sport that you really enjoyed in previous eras of running?
No. I wish people would adopt the things in trail running that are common mentalities that we in trail running to road running. Something that I like appreciate so much about trail running is being able to see things that you can only see on foot, and you know, getting to the top of a peak is so fulfilling, and putting pace aside, I think all of those things are so unique to trail running. And I do think that road running just becomes really serious, and not serious is maybe the wrong word, but it just like, if you train for a marathon cycle, like you're plugging away for 3 months, 4 months for very small potential gains. Maybe you're PRing by 10 to 30 seconds in a marathon, and every workout feels like super high stakes. You hit the paces you don't, or you don't. And I think coming to the trails breathed new life into my running, because it's just like, what are you going to do? Launch yourself into another marathon training cycle, and you're trying to find the flattest course and the perfect weather. And like, we're all going to complain if the weather's not 5 degrees, like cooler or whatever than it was supposed to be. So no, I think like trail running entered my running in my life at a time when I definitely felt like starting to feel tired with what road had to offer. So no, I don't think anything's missing. I think people could learn a lot from stepping on the trails. And I think that maybe it's something where like, I was scared to do it for sure, because I felt like I was terrible at it and I was falling all over the place. And so I think a lot of people don't want to do something that they're not great at, but I think if you do just give it a try, there's so much to gain that can then help your road running if that's what you choose, you know, to focus on or go back to. So,
You mentioned the access and perception problem in our sport, and I'm wondering, what do you think is the biggest impediment to more runners like yourself from that formal track and road background entering the sport sooner or at any point in their careers? Is it access and perception?
Yeah. So for example, if I continue to live in Manhattan, it's really tough, next to impossible to, especially if you don't have a car or to regularly get in one, to find trails. So, and you know, what I think we all experience is that it's really key to train specifically for these races, and you can't get away with just doing a lot of volume on the roads. So I wish there were great meccas for trail running all around the country, but unfortunately that's just not the case. So that's a tough one, I think, in terms of like, how do we increase access when people just aren't geographically proximate to great trail?
That's a great point.
But at the same time, like, I think of my experience here and like how generous people are in both Park City and Salt Lake City communities with sharing their trail intel and helping people build routes and just bringing people along to crew. Like, I've been so lucky to tag along with Leah Yangley and Mike McMonagle on a number of races, and I've learned so much from just observing. So I think like when you do have a community that gives back in that way and wants to pass along the trail love, then that kind of breaks down barriers. But I wouldn't have gone for a trail run if someone hadn't shown me. So yeah, I don't have a good answer, but I think it's tricky.
I thought you had the perfect answer. And sometimes the questions I ask, the answer is so obvious that I forget it. And you said it, geographic is probably the biggest bottleneck in the whole situation. I just thought of this, maybe in the same way that we have study abroad programs in college, we can have run abroad programs where these brands can just sponsor their athletes to go live in Salt Lake City or Boulder for a month or two. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Host a runner.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Let's go into the lightning round. Some of these questions are funky. You can answer them however you want. The first is, what is something that you have recently changed your mind about, either in the ultra running world or with running in general, and why?
I alluded to this before, but this just relates to life in general, is sleep. I thought I didn't need it, and I operated okay with little, but I'm so much better off with it. And yeah, that's been a performance enhancer for me, for sure, in the past year or so. So I wish I had slept more in college and maybe I could have run faster, but hindsight.
What's a recent book, movie, podcast, piece of content that you've consumed that has left a big impression on you and it's worth sharing?
Yeah, this is probably a common one, but Tommy Pusey's podcast with Rich Roll, I thought, was really impactful. I had met him, actually, he was there to console me after my hamstring injury, because that occurred when we were in Doha at the US 50 or the World 50K Championships, and he was on the team that year. So yeah, he's awesome, and I loved listening to that.
This is a really weird question, but what is your favorite purchase that you've made that was under $100?
Oh man. This is dorky, but recently a headlamp. So I never owned one, never ran with one, nothing until coming here, because you don't need one in New York. And I just think I love how dark it is here, but then I love how you can still get out there and explore, whether on the mountain or running. It's still a novelty to me to have that little guy.
Last question. If you could put a message on a billboard for all to see, what would it say and why?
I would say, don't be afraid to fail. I've failed so many times. And I think fear of failure stops people from trying things that might change their life. So,
amen. Well, like I said, I've loved this conversation. It's been great to get to meet you. We'll have to share a run in Park City or Salt Lake soon. And if there's folks that want to follow your journey to the 50K championships and to Comrades and beyond, how can they get in touch? How can they follow?
Yep, I'm probably most active on Instagram, and it's Sarah C. Cummings. And then I'm also on Strava, so Sarah Cummings.
All right, until next time.
Great. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. One thing that struck me about Sarah was, similar to Hillary Allen, her ability to articulate the injury experience and the recovery process and the mindset shifts in a way that any runner could relate to. And I hope you picked up on that as well. I was really impressed, and it gave me a lot to think about. Before we go, I want to give you some insight into what February 2022 will look like for the podcast. The Golden Ticket Talks will resume after the Black Canyon 100K. And as you may know, due to the cancellation of the Tarawera Ultra Marathon, there will be not four, but six golden tickets up for grabs, and therefore six interviews to do. I know that's a lot, and in an effort to not crowd up your podcast feeds, I may combine them all into one or two giant mega episodes. That is to be determined. In addition, we are releasing the second Ask Me Anything episode, where I address some questions surrounding money in the sport, athlete sponsorship, running teams, and way more. We've also got more business and cultural episodes coming out with crossover figures in other areas of running and sport in general, so stay tuned. I'm really excited about what we have in the pipeline. Thank you, as always, for listening. I know there are a lot of shows out there, and your attention is limited and valuable, so I really appreciate it. If you think more people should listen to this show, consider leaving a rating and review in Apple or Spotify or whichever podcast player you use. That's all for now. Until next time.